Hi, it's Elise Lunan, host of Pulling the Thread. My guest today is the journalist James Nestor, author of the fascinating, mega best-selling book Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today. Hi, it's Elise Lunan, host of Pulling the Thread. I'm an author, podcast host, and parent who built a long career in media. I grew up in a state of perpetual curiosity, investigating the world and asking a lot of questions. In this show, I chat with culture-defining leaders, thinkers, and experts about this rare moment that we find ourselves in and how to think about our own lives and experiences within a larger social and spiritual construct.
Look at how we've convoluted and complicated the most simple things. Look at nutrition now. How many supplements are we supposed to take? How many grams of fat am I supposed to eat? And then grams of carbs? And then how many grams of sugar is tolerable? It's insane that we've managed, because I think a lot of people don't believe stuff unless it sounds scientific or it's extremely complicated. But nature isn't that complicated. Like, why do all of these cultures, the few that are around now, indigenous cultures, they don't have high blood pressure, they don't have heart disease, they don't have diabetes, they don't have anxiety, they don't have panic, they all have straight teeth. They don't also have any big pharma. They don't have dentists. They don't need any of this stuff because they are living in an environment in which humans naturally evolved. You and I are not. We're living in an environment that is so different. And it's no coincidence that the more we integrate back into nature, the better we get.
So says the brilliant and endlessly entertaining James Nestor, author of Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art. While Breath is a mega bestseller across the globe, it's also an award-winning work of science reporting, stringing together seemingly disparate streams of thought and science into a treatise on one of the most significant impacts on our health, the way we learn to breathe. Yep, breathe. James makes the case that our tendency toward mouth breathing works against our very nature, distorting our faces and jaws, ramping our anxiety, and weakening our immune response, simply because our noses are designed to filter the world on our behalf. I loved our long-ranging conversation, and it was wonderful to be in James's company again. Okay, let's get to our chat. Well, I'm excited to talk to you again. The last time I spoke to you was either before or as your book was coming into the world, and I still see it in every airport in America. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I've seen it in a few airports. It's always a little surreal. I don't see anyone reading it in airports, but I assume they're just reading on Kindle, right? That's a safe assumption.
Or listening to it in the audio version.
You know what? I didn't think about that. Thanks for comforting me. My insecurity.
I guess that's the moment when you know you haven't made as a writer, when you are sitting next to someone on a plane who's reading your book. Is that the sign that you're waiting for?
You know, it's happened to me once, and I was so curious if this person, you know, was enjoying it or learning anything. But then I thought, what if they really hated it? That would really ruin my day. So, you know, sometimes it's best just to leave nature to its own course. That's it. I can't imagine that people just lug around hardcovers though. I mean, it's enviable and respectable that you're lugging around this 2-pound hardcover thing when you could just have it on your phone. So I think that's a trend that's starting to come back up. I guess people want other people to see what they're reading, which is fine. just be careful about your book choices though.
Yeah. I read physical books. I'm a weirdo. There's something about I take notes, but two, I am already on my phone so much that I appreciate the opportunity to put it down.
I completely agree with you. I'm a big fan of ink on paper, but when I'm traveling,
right,
I'm a big fan of not having a bunch of crap in my man purse. So I have never traveled with a hardcover, but maybe after this conversation, it's time to do that.
It's time.
I'll pick a good one. Yeah.
It'll increase your VOT max.
Didn't know that. Okay. I'll let you know what it is in a month or two.
Can't wait for it to make it into your next book. But really, I mean, it's funny because breath belongs to all of us, right? And then as you, I think you, the statistic that you offered is that 90% of us are breathing incorrectly. Do you think that that percentage has gone down since breath was published?
I'd love to say that I was responsible for changing the breathing habits of humans around the world. Of course, that's not the case. I think what we can really attribute the awareness to breathing to is this little thing called COVID, which came out exactly at the same time that my book released, within a couple weeks. And I think that made people, once you lose the ability to breathe, you're like, oh my God, maybe this thing, breathing is kind of important. Maybe I should pay attention to it. And I think that's what has stirred all the interest in breathing and breathing health.
That's obviously a great point. Everyone I know tapes their mouths shut, which I still can't bring myself to do because of you and your book and that health intervention in my family. I have an Elf appliance expander for my palate that I sleep with every night. My son has an Elf appliance expander in his mouth, top and bottom. So I can't really get it's too big for me to mouth tape, but maybe that's next for me, James.
I, by right, you are expanding your airway and you're not a chronic mouth breather, then I don't see a reason to use sleep tape. I don't think everyone needs to use sleep tape. So I think if you breathe through your mouth at night, it's something you might want to consider. But if you are not a mouth breather at night, why would you use tape? You don't need it. I'm talking to the, 65% of the population that are mouth breathers at night. I found it to be incredibly beneficial. It's the one thing I've heard more than anything else about the book. I mean, thousands and thousands of people everywhere. Every time I do a speaking gig, people come up to me. It's like, oh, that mouth tape has really changed my life. So for a lot of people, it's great. For some people, it doesn't do anything. And for those who don't need it, why would you use it?
Yeah, I probably do need it. I just can't. I just can't handle all of these interventions at the same time.
It's just it's just too much stuff. I get what you're saying. Get rid of, once your expansion is over, then you can kind of figure out whether or not you need it. I will say, when I was doing that palatal expansion for the book and for my airway health, I really needed it because this even opened my mouth up even more than it was open before. So I found it to be very beneficial, but man, is it a pain in the butt to put that thing in your mouth and then put tape on your mouth. I mean, you just imagine if there's a fire or something, you go to try to call 911, you've got a little work to do, but
it's very sexy. I've learned from my husband, my nightly rituals.
I think in some bondage circles, it might be. We could check in about that. I have not heard of such circles, but I guarantee you they're out there.
Just a little myotape alpha appliance circle. No, I am really grateful to you for your guidance during that period, because I think maybe right before I had interviewed you, I had interviewed Rafael Paleo, who's at the Stanford Sleep Institute, and we were talking about my oldest son. And I was explaining his restless leg syndrome and some of his attention issues and other things that were going on, migraines. And he was like, you need to have him tested for a sleep disorder. And we've started on a long, I realized he has a tied tongue. He has a tiny palate. His jaw is out of place. I mean, all of this stuff probably seems obvious, but it's kind of not often when you're a parent. He was diagnosed with multiple sleep disorders, although I think really they're just a function of the mouth, what's happening with his mouth. And so now, I mean, it's pretty dramatic. We're still mid-process, but it's been an incredible intervention for him and for his sleep and his ability to focus. And similarly for me with my migraine disorder and my palate, when my dentist puts his hands in my mouth to expand my palate, it immediately drops me into parasympathetic. The first time he did it, I almost cried from relief. It's interesting how much anxiety I think can be held in the mouth and how much better I feel the wider my palate gets.
Yeah, and what's interesting about all this is people may say, oh, it's some placebo effect or whatever, but this is basic biology. If you're struggling to breathe, struggling to do anything 20,000 times a day, 25,000 times a day, what's going to happen to your body? What's going to happen to your anxiety levels and your stress levels? So to me, it's very simple. It's binary. Yeah. And what you experienced is just you and so much of the population has a smaller palate, has a smaller airway, probably has airway issues, just like everyone else I know. So by opening up your palate and opening up your airway, you're going to breathe easier. And obviously that's going to relax you. So I think that this is such common sense that everyone can acknowledge that, you know, that in that sequence of events, at the end of it, you will be better, and which is exactly what happens. I can't tell you how many hundreds of case studies I've seen from dentists like Raphael and Kevin Boyd, and who are just like, this is before and after sleep apnea, no sleep apnea, anxiety, no anxiety, ADHD, bedwetting at the age 12, and none of that afterwards. Because so oftentimes, a lot of those things are sleep issues and they're airway issues.
Yeah. No, it's true. And it's what happens when you're not looking at Max's, the way that his sleep disorder showed up. It's not that he's an incredibly heavy sleeper. It's that he doesn't get into a proper REM cycle. He's so disturbed throughout the night that he's not REM cycling. It was a really interesting experience to see the effects of that.
Yeah, I just think that it's absolutely so odd and quite depressing that you've had to learn this yourself by doing your own investigations, and that no other doctors were looking at his breathing or my breathing or anyone else's breathing. You know, they're so easy to prescribe things without knowing the core issue. And so often, not all the time, but so often it's related to sleep disordered breathing. And it, you know, if anything happens in the next few years, I hope that this is something that will be better acknowledged and better treated, because so many kids are suffering from this and they have no idea why they're suffering from so many other symptoms.
No, totally. And as you write, you spend a lot of time in the book talking about orthodontia and sort of the traditional practice, which is pulling teeth, right? And how instead of expanding the jaw, we're making our mouths even smaller, and that the expansion was seen as quackery, right? Or just odd, or quackery.
Well, what's interesting about that is, yeah, and I've gotten some pushback from dentists who call me a quack. But what's interesting is the very first orthodontics, before we were putting people in braces and extracting teeth, was expansion. This is what was done in the 1860s. And this is what was done for decades and decades and decades. And one thing I learned from dental historians is that it was only until the 1940s, where so many people had crooked teeth, they needed to find a production line way of fixing people's teeth without completely ignoring the airway, right? How do we fix a bunch of people's teeth? How do we make their teeth straight? And braces and extractions work really good to make your teeth straight, at the cost of your face and at the cost of your airway. And this is would have been so controversial 20 years ago when people were saying it, and they were, dentists were saying this. And now I have a strange work life. I speak at a lot of dental conferences, and I always expect people to come up and completely eviscerate me afterwards. And I'm ready for that. I have my research. It just isn't happening. So I think that they've known this a long time, and they needed someone who wasn't a dentist to tell them this, which is odd, because I have no license they can revoke, right? I'm an author, so I can say whatever I want. What I'm saying is based on all of the facts that I found over several years.
Pulling the Thread is sponsored by BetterHelp. As I've grown up, my energetic pattern has become increasingly apparent to me. I'm a sprinter. I tend to do a huge amount of work in a single day, or all of my socializing for an entire month in the span of a week, and then I need some time off. Ultimately, I'm an introvert and need a lot of time to be by myself. And more, I'm realizing that I also need time to recharge my brain and my energy before I throw myself back into work. I've tried to become a more steady Eddie type of person, but it just never works out like that. I'm not structured in that way, or maybe conditioned in that way. It's taken me a long time to learn how to understand my own internal battery and to run opportunities and events, whether it's a dinner out with friends, a book talk, a piece of freelance writing, through my body before I immediately say yes. Is this a yes for me or is it a no? Is it a maybe? I work on this a lot with my therapist because tuning into ourselves does not come naturally. Or we've learned how to snowplow over our own wants and needs for so long that we've lost the connection to what we really want to do. Thank God for therapy. This is one of the reasons I'm very excited for therapeutic solutions like BetterHelp. They have licensed therapists who are available worldwide and specialize in depression, anxiety, sleep disturbances, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBTQA issues, grief, and self-esteem. BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with the therapist. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist, and you can switch to a new therapist anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/PTT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/PTT. In the book, too, you trace the roots of this, right? So, and the fact that through a number of circumstances, we are mouse. This is when you look at more ancient skulls, you don't see this crowding and crookedness, right? So can you sort of take us through the evolutions in modern life that have netted us this result?
Sure. So this is a little depressing, but there's a happy ending. Don't worry. So what happened was when we, all of our ancestors, ancient ancestors, had straight teeth, okay? All of them. And we never needed to have wisdom teeth extracted. Could you imagine a species that needed to extract their wisdom teeth at 17 or 18 years of age? It just never happened. That's not how we were designed. Only until around 300, 400 years ago, depending on where you were we starting to see these wide incidences of crooked teeth. And those incidences of crooked teeth came right in line with the introduction of industrial foods. So you could see it within a single generation, 50% of a population would have crooked teeth, from having perfectly straight teeth to crooked teeth. Two generations later, about 70% of the population. Three generations later, about 85% of the population. Four generations later, you know, look around, that's us. It's 90%+ of the population. So this is not some harebrained hypothesis. It's been proven out for decades and decades and decades. They've done pig studies. They've looked at humans in the same family and in the same village and in the same counties who had been introduced to industrialized food versus those who were eating their traditional diets. And the same story played out every single place. So it has nothing to do with genetics. When people say, oh, my teeth are crooked because it's, you know, a genetic predisposition, it's garbage. It has to do with the fact that we changed our diet to very soft foods. And that's it. That's the reality. You can argue anything else you want around this, but it's not true. This is what I'm telling you is what has been clearly documented. Whole books written about it.
So, yeah, we just stopped gnawing on things, essentially, like working those masseter jaws. And
yeah, and that's essentially, you know, minerals, vitamins do make a difference. If you don't have enough vitamin D, right, your bones grow very soft. Same with K2, you need that as well. But nothing is more powerful than the masticatory stress, especially early in life. So it starts right in infancy. You can look at kids who have been breastfed versus those who have been bottle fed, they will grow different profiles. And the kids who have been bottle fed will have a higher incidence of snoring and sleep apnea later on in life. I get ridiculed every time I talk about breastfeeding and bottle feeding. I want to be super clear. I'm not judging anyone for anything, right? I know how difficult it is to live in the modern world. So there's zero judgment here. I'm just offering up facts that I learned from experts in the field. And after weaning for breastfeeding, it's essential to go on to chewing regular foods. Our ancestors did not eat Gerbers. They didn't eat processed carrots or applesauce. They ate meat. They ate hard foods. And so there's a whole movement called baby-led weaning, which is just about weaning kids onto regular hard foods. And all that masticatory stress builds proper muscles, it builds proper bones, it builds proper airway. I did not get any of that growing up. So I am like many people in my generation where I was just, you know, bottle fed, and then I was just weaned onto soft foods, and then I ate soft foods basically for up until now, till I discovered this stuff. Even healthy foods are soft, so just very little chewing.
Yeah. No, certainly. And you talk about, I think you're talking about maybe it was Plains Indians, how those mothers, those parents would actively, there was just, it was known as like a, was it more of an immune response? Or can you tell us a little bit about the defensiveness or the defensive nature of breathing through the nose and why Indigenous tribes, how they intuitively understood that and would close mouths of kids to teach them to breathe through their noses?
So we know so little about what Native American cultures were like pre-contact, because nobody was really going out there. Or if they were going out there, they were going out to trade. They weren't going out to record any of the culture, any of the habits, what they did to heal themselves. But George Catlin did, and he traveled more miles than Lewis and Clark. And he went all around to 50 different Native American cultures, and he found that they all had straight teeth. Right? They all had these big, wide, pronathic faces. Many of them were 7 feet tall. They were the tallest cultures ever to have been found on Earth, as Native Americans. And they understood and acknowledged and appreciated breathing as a medicine. This was not something they did flippantly. And they taught everyone to breathe from the moment they were born. So infants were trained to nasal breathe. They were even put on boards so that it would be very hard to mouth breathe at night. And they believed that this allowed them to grow this very handsome or structured profile. It also allowed them to breathe better. And we can't prove that. There will never be a randomized controlled trial of putting babies on boards versus not putting babies on boards. But we can look at the skeletal record and find these people had gorgeous teeth. They had huge airways, huge sinus cavities. And from that, we can infer that they had significantly fewer breathing respiratory issues than we deal with today.
And can you talk a little bit about the protective nature of the nasal passages in terms of when we breathe through our noses, how that can be protective or not? I'm not sure where the science is. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's basic biology. If you were just to look at a cross section of a human skull, what you would see is that if you take a breath in through your mouth, there's nothing in the way of that breath, right? So this unprocessed, unconditioned, unfiltered air just goes directly into our lungs. That's how long it takes to take a huge breath of air. But if you were to breathe through the nose, it takes a longer time. It takes much more effort. And that is because you're forcing that air through all of these different structures, these different turbinates, past all the cilia, which are these little hair-like articles in our noses that grab onto allergens and dust. And breathing through the nose helps protect our bodies against bacteria, against viruses, and more. So it's not only the structures and all of those tissues, it is also the fact that we release 6 times more nitric oxide when we breathe through the nose. And that nitric oxide helps kill viruses and bacteria. So it's our nose is a way of purifying the air around us, just the same way a Brita would purify the water from a tap. Our nose does the same thing. And so especially in this time where there's so many viruses and so much bacteria and so many allergens and smog and pollution around, the fact that you wouldn't be breathing primarily through your nose is kind of crazy, because it's really our first line of defense.
Yeah. And then you talk a fair amount about our tendency, besides sort of that gasping, that open mouth sort of like, which I am very definitely guilty of, but this overbreathing, and I'm a chronic hyperventilator too, but this lack of a full exhale. And how common is it, do you think, that most of us are sort of above capacity or holding too much breath in our lungs without fully exercising the circle?
It's hard to tell on that. If you look at chronic hyperventilation, I've seen stats from 20% of the population to significantly fewer than that. So we don't really know. So few people study this. If you look at the inability to get a full exhale and how many people are breathing dysfunctionally in that regard, I think it's the vast majority of the population. You know, I stated that 90% of us are suffering from some sort of respiratory dysfunction. I say that at the beginning of the book. I've learned that it is probably closer to 95% of us. It is so rare that somebody breathes normally. And that's the one correction that a lot of scientists wanted me to make. They're just like, you were being way too soft on humanity. So we're all thoroughly messed up, whether or not we snore, have asthma, chronic sinusitis, mouth breathe. But this thing about this inefficient breathing is something that affects basically everyone. You could think that athletes, you're like, oh, these are the most fit people in the world. They know how to breathe. No, they know how to push through the pain. But many of them are severely dysfunctional breathers. I know this because I know many elite coaches who work with Olympians and Navy SEALs and UFC fighters. And they said, these people, their breathing is a disaster. So an exercise that you can do, breathing in is easy, right? You just breathe in, but so many of us will just continue breathing in, especially when we're stressed, packing air on top of air on top of air, which is not efficient. So if we want to get a really efficient breath of air, we have to first exhale all that stale air. And in order to do that, we have to lift that diaphragm up. So a lot of us are conditioned to have that diaphragm in this down position and just pack in air. But the real key, and the yogis knew this, and the ancient Chinese knew this, was to learn how to truly relax and deflate and to let that air out. And it takes a long time to get this trick. And there's many different exercises you can do to practice this. But it's essential for efficient breathing.
Yeah. And that's to really, really focus on that exhale until you're truly empty, right? To the point where you are... You call it a sub-whisper.
This is one trick that a breathing therapist, who's actually a choral conductor, that went and rehabbed emphysemics who were left for dead, hundreds and hundreds of them. No one knew what to do with these guys. They were laid out on gurneys, fed a steady diet of antibiotics, and pumped full of oxygen. But this guy went in, Carl Stau, and taught them how to exhale. That's his intervention. That was his prescription. Learn how to exhale, and then you will learn how to inhale, and you will breathe properly. So an exercise he had them do was to take in a breath through the nose and to count from 1 to 10 as fast as they could. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And when they were out of breath, to keep going. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then to sub-whisper. Happy you brought up that word. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Until you're completely out of breath. So don't overdo it, okay? So many of us, when we learn something new, we want to overdo it and do this a million times. You have to slowly acclimate that muscle, that diaphragm, into that position. But I found that practice is really, really useful. There's some other Tao practices. There's some yoga practices that really help you exhale as well. And those are beneficial too.
Yeah. And for people who don't, because it's been interesting, I've had this conversation with so many friends who don't understand that what they are doing is actually chronic hyperventilation, because we think of hyperventilation and we think of breathing into a bag and being in a panic attack. But chronic hyperventilation, which I do, which I can do for months at a time, every afternoon, particularly when I'm sleep deprived and or stressed, is overbreathing. It's this, right? So it's, but it's a mix up in my brain, and it's a mix up between the brain and the body where I think I don't have enough oxygen because I can no longer take a deep breath because my lungs are oversaturated. And so anyone who has experienced this where you hit that point where you're like, I can't breathe, and then it obviously triggers you to breathe more, and then you're yawning to get deep breaths. I think it's actually quite common. I think you said 20%, just when I've friends have sort of complained to me and I'm like, oh, you know what that is? And they're like, no, I have no idea what that is. I just think I'm dying.
It's very common. So, and it's very, very similar to I'm happy you're laughing about it. I wasn't, but it's very similar to panic attacks. I really think that the best thing that you can do is just to really train yourself to nasal breathe as often as you can. And until it becomes an unconscious habit, then you don't have to think about it because your mouth is just closed all the time. It's helpful. It was helpful for me at the beginning to put a little piece of tape on my mouth while I was sitting in front of a computer at work and to just leave it there just so I could train myself to breathe through my nose. Another thing that's helpful is to, once you acknowledge that feeling is coming on, to take control of it and to force yourself to breathe more slowly. 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out is a good one. That physiological sigh, which is two breaths in and then just let it out and do about 5 rounds of those to reset your respiration. And I think that once you become aware of it, you can then intervene and help to fix it. Another thing, if you notice that this is coming on at the same time of day, is to set timers on your phone every 15 minutes, every 20 minutes, every half an hour, whatever you want. And just when that one ring comes off, it's like, okay, I'm going to check in on my breathing right now. Am I breathing through my mouth? Am I breathing too much? And I'm just going to reset. Take a couple breaths in and just relax. That's going to reset your respiration. So you can start with that. This doesn't work for everybody, but there are no negative side effects of this. It's only going to help you. It might help a little bit, or it might help significantly to help reset that hyperventilation. What you are talking about is what so many other people talk about. It's this chemoreceptive sensitivity to CO2. And the more tolerant you get of slow breathing, the more CO2, the calmer you will get. And this is where all the science in breathing, not all of it, but a lot of it is heading right now, is this tolerance for CO2, which is why breath holding activities are very, very helpful for chronic hyperventilation and panic.
When I was in my early 20s, and let's just say not living my best life, my late brother-in-law and best friend, Peter, took me to France. Ostensibly, we were going to see and stay with his aunt, but really, I think he wanted to cheer me up. We went to the flea markets in the countryside on the weekends, where I found a set of very old religious medals. I decided to invest these medals with the belief that everything in my life could shift, and it did. I figured out how to frame them myself very badly, and they've stayed with me ever since. When Peter passed away in 2017, these medals became even more important to me, earning pride of place next to my desk. I look at them every day. But my poor framing job from 2002 started to fail recently, and so I decided to entrust them to Framebridge. I've been having Framebridge frame all of my family photos for years. You can upload digital prints, and they do a beautiful and speedy job, making them the perfect place for holiday gifts, as my mother-in-law and parents treasure photos of my kids. But Framebridge also takes on objects that are typically expensive and difficult to frame, whether it's menus, tickets, original artwork, personal milestones, license plates, hotel keys, keys to your first home, or in my case, medals. You can easily order online at framebridge.com or visit one of their 20-plus Framebridge retail stores. They provide free, secure, prepaid packaging for physical items, and you can ship them on over. They will then frame your piece and ship it to you in days. It's easy. It's affordable. You know exactly what it will cost up front, and they offer every conceivable framing option. Everything I've ever sent Framebridge has always looked even better than I expected. Plus, if you're not 100% happy with your piece, they'll make it right. See why FrameBridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit FrameBridge.com or a local FrameBridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That's FrameBridge.com. Talk about CO2, because wasn't it common, like, I don't know if they still use it, but wasn't it a common intervention on fire trucks, et cetera? Like, this is old, right? Mm-hmm. Having a tank of CO2.
So CO2 is that trigger to breathe. Right now, if you were to exhale and you just wait and you feel that need to breathe building up, that is not dictated by oxygen. Okay, it has nothing to do with the lack of oxygen in your body. It's dictated by an increase of carbon dioxide. So when that increase of carbon dioxide hits a certain level, it triggers that need to breathe. But what happens is when people are over-breathing so much, that trigger, that CO2 trigger goes lower and lower and lower. The threshold gets so low that even holding your breath for 5 seconds, 10 seconds at a time, people have chronic hyperventilation or panic. They go,
right.
Because they're so sensitive to CO2. It has nothing to do with oxygen, which is why I would suggest people who have chronic hyperventilation syndrome or panic to get a pulse oximeter. Don't believe me, believe the data coming off of your finger, and you will see your oxygen levels are just fine.
Right.
What you're doing is responding to that rising level of CO2. So scientists knew this more than 100 years ago. They used CO2, a combination of CO2 and oxygen. It's extremely effective for hyperventilation. It was effective for asthma. It's effective for stroke, smoke inhalation, and more. They also started using it for anxiety and panic. And what they did is they would give people this big dose of CO2, which mimicked a very long breath hold. So if you hold your breath for a very long time, your CO2 levels are going to go way up, right? A lot of people don't want to do that. So they would just put on a gas mask and shoot them up with CO2, make them inhale this big bolus of CO2, which would allow that threshold of CO2 to rise up a little more. It's like, you know, endurance training. It's like weightlifting. And lo and behold, this was so effective for anxiety and panic. And now it's coming back. The NIH is funding new studies in CO2 therapy, and it's been working wonderfully, because of course it is, because we already knew this. If you don't want to inhale CO2, you can, breath holding is such a powerful thing. Especially
so what,
for people.
Yeah. What will be the application of CO2, like an inhaler of CO2 or?
You can get, they're doing that right now. It's not an inhaler. You have to go down to the lab and then you take this big bolus, this big inhale of CO2, and usually do that one or two times and then you leave. And people say, my God, their anxiety is over. Not for everyone, but it's, according to some scientists, it works better than any other intervention, period. Because where the science is leading us right now is several researchers believe that anxiety, panic, these are not mental conditions. It's a physiological problem tied to chemoreceptor sensitivity. And if this is true, it's going to explain why SSRIs really don't work that good for anxiety and panic, why so many of these other tranquilizers don't seem to do much, because they're affecting the wrong thing. The thing we need to be looking at is CO2. And this is also why breath holding is part of every ancient breathing system that there is. From ancient Chinese Qigong to pranayama to ancient yoga systems, all across the world, people were focusing on holding their breath.
Right. And was it Rama, the story of Rama, and just sort of the ability to affect the autonomic nervous system? And can you talk a little bit about, I mean, that's what's so amazing. And obviously people have heard about monks who can raise their body temperature however many degrees sort of spontaneously. Our ability to control these things that we think are beyond our control has been shown. But can you tell us about Rama and what he was able to do?
Sure. So None of us will ever get to this level of, of breathing fitness. I actually don't know if anyone on the planet will anymore since the advent of cell phones and computers and Facebook and all the rest. But this is when people were able to study for decades in a cave alone, study the process of breathing and meditation. And one person who really was good at it was Swami Rama. And this is somebody who grew up in the Himalayas, you know, was meditating at the age of 4, did his time in a cave alone, I think it was 5 years, and then went out and showed the world what he could do. Because a lot of scientists said this is complete garbage, but he was able, in a lab setting with a Navy physicist measuring everything on his body, he was able to change the temperature in his hand 11 degrees from one side of the hand to the other. So he took conscious control of his blood vessels. Mm-hmm. And he could make one side of his hand gray and the other very, very red and rosy with fresh blood. He was able to trigger his heart rate to beat at 300 beats per minute. That's 300. With under his conscious control, he was able to turn that on and turn it off. According to some reports, he was able to move a metal needle across the room that was on a compass hand. Crazy stuff, but you can read the reports yourself. This was published. This was big news back in the 70s, right? It was published in the New York Times Magazine. So it was all verified. And yet Swami Rama came and went, and people still think this stuff is impossible. So he was not only able to take control of his nervous system, but he was able to take control of other processes and systems within his body to do impossible things. It turns out that we can all take control of our nervous systems. This was supposed to be impossible, but we can do it with this thing called breathing. And this isn't some big claim. This is science. And this is what was discovered about 6 years ago with studies with Wim Hof. We can take control of aspects of our immune function and our nervous system by breathing.
Yeah. I love Wim Hof. He's one for the ages too. And for people who don't know his work, it's primarily cold exposure therapy, but the stuff that he has subjected himself to, the work that he's done in the lab fighting off viruses, is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they shot him up with the endotoxin version of E. coli. He breathed himself to a state where he suffered no symptoms. And then people said, well, you're just weird. He said, okay, give me any group of people. I'll show them to do the same thing. He spent 4 days with this group of people, randomly controlled trial, right? Totally randomized. And every single one of that was in his group was able to breathe this way and fight off the symptoms of E. coli, the endotoxin version of E. coli. All of the controls suffered from severe symptoms, vomiting, headaches, sweating. So he just proved that anyone with a gumption can do this. And the great thing is you don't need to sign up for some 4-week course, you know, to learn this. It's available to everyone everywhere. It's free. It's cold exposure is free. You can take a cold shower for basically free. You can learn how to breathe this. He calls it Wim Hof method. It's a 1,000-year-old technique called TUMO. You can learn how to do that for free. You just have to want to do it and put in the time. And from what I see, a lot of people in our, you know, society don't want to do it, which is fine. There's no blame game here, but it's available to you.
In the last few years, I've made a conscious decision to be careful about everything I buy. I want to actually use it all and not just acquire it. And I also think that everything has energy. In addition, thanks to almost a decade in the wellness industry, I'm very conscious about product claims and product content. This is why I like Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin, which is clinically backed with high-quality, traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. I also like their Symbiotic Plus 2, which is a probiotic that's simple and effective. Ritual makes the most elegant multivitamin around. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus has everything you need, specifically 9 key nutrients and 2 capsules per day. Their unique B-Litin oil is so slick, it's actually patented. And this is important, they have a delayed release design so it makes them gentle on an empty stomach. Also, Ritual studies their vitamins, which is not the standard in the industry. Ritual conducted a university-led clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy. It increased vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. As most of us are getting far less sun right now, summer's almost here, but not quite, vitamin D supplementation is essential. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is also one of the few women's multis that's USP verified, meaning what's on the label is what's in the formula. Want to hear something wild? Only about 1% of supplement brands on the market have the USP verified mark. It's also soy-free, gluten-free, vegan-friendly, and formulated without GMOs. Did I also mention that Ritual is a certified B Corp and female-founded? Nothing makes me happier than these two facts. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/thread. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/thread for 25% off. Why do you think that people like Rama can come and demonstrate, or WIM, or a lot of these interventions? And it's good to know that CO2 is potentially back, but is it just because it's so much harder, it's so much easier to give someone something to take than it is to train people to live a little differently? So philosophically, yeah, what is it?
I think so. And because a lot of these things I'm talking about, a lot of people just aren't going to do them, right? And again, I'm not blaming anyone. But for some of these more intensive things, it's how do you keep someone inspired to do this stuff? And this is what doctors, they're not responsible for that, but they want to help people out. So prescriptions work, like pills really work. They're great band-aids for a lot of chronic conditions, but they're not dealing with the core issue. So what I try to do in my work is say, hey, you know, this isn't the only thing you can do. You can continue taking pills and they work great. But I think people should have a choice. Mm-hmm. At least when a patient comes in, you have a choice. It's like, hey, your blood pressure's up. You can drastically change your diet and exercise, or you can take the pills. Both of them work. You can also try breathing. That works as well. When someone comes in with anxiety or panic, you know, here are the two things that you can do. There's a choice. How many people will take that other choice that requires a lot more effort? I don't know. Probably not that many, but they should at least be given that knowledge in order mm-hmm. to choose the path they want to take to heal themselves.
Yeah. No, and it's funny too that my dad's actually a pulmonologist, but this idea that you want a doctor, I mean, I think we can all relate to this. Like, you want some sort of complicated explanation for what's happening to you. You want in some ways complexity, right? So feeling terrible, going to a doctor and having them tell you to engage in proper breathing is dissatisfying, I think, for a lot of us, right? Even though it's a blessing in its own way. But I think there's part of us that seeks complex answers to problems that feel complex to us. And so it's somehow maybe disappointing to be told, drink more water, learn how to breathe, eat whole foods.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, look at how we've convoluted and complicated the most simple things. Look at nutrition now. How many supplements are we supposed to take? How many grams of fat am I supposed to eat? And then grams of carbs? And then how many grams of sugar is tolerable? It's insane that we've managed, because I think a lot of people don't believe stuff unless it sounds scientific or it's extremely complicated. But nature isn't that complicated. Like, why do all of these cultures, the few that are around now, indigenous cultures, they don't have high blood pressure, they don't have heart disease, they don't have diabetes, they don't have anxiety, they don't have panic, they all have straight teeth. They don't also have any big pharma. They don't have dentists. They don't need any of this stuff because they are living in an environment in which humans naturally evolved. You and I are not. We're living in an environment that is so different. And it's no coincidence that the more we integrate back into nature, the better we get. Whether or not that's eating natural whole foods, whether that's walking 10,000 steps a day, which is about the average that indigenous populations walk, whether that's we start breathing through our nose, which is what we were designed to do. all of these things, it's very, very simple. We've created these diseases. They're diseases of civilization. And when we remove all of these layers of civilization from us, our body enters a state of healing. So breathing ties into that, diet ties into that, exercise ties into it.
I know that you don't have a tape preference, or you used to not have a stated preference. Do you now have a preference on which tape people should use? And then I would say MyoTape is helpful for those, if you feel like you're going to have a panic response to taping your mouth shut, because it just sort of binds the corners and lets you theoretically open your lips. But it's expensive.
So I don't care what tape people use. All I will say is that don't use duct tape. Don't use scotch tape. Don't use masking tape. Those are bad. I know they're probably around the house in the garage. Do not use those. Don't go on YouTube. There's just complete garbage on YouTube about this. What I have found, what works for me, I'm not saying this is going to work for everybody, but after going through about 30 different types of tape, I found that surgical micropore tape, which you can get at Walgreens or on Amazon or at your local indie pharmacy, this is tape that is made to be put on skin and taken off. So it has a very mild adhesive. I take a little piece of that and then I remove even more of the adhesive and I put it on my lips. The point with this tape is it's supposed to be able to come right off very easily without any effort. So if you are struggling to get the tape off, you're doing this all wrong. And if you want to use MyoTape, which, as you explained, is a tape that goes around the mouth, not over it, it works great for some people. Kids love it. Parents love it because they don't want to put tape on their kid's mouth. That works great too. So a lot of this is experimentation. I have no preference because everyone's different and everyone has different things that they like or don't like about certain tapes.
Yeah. In the years, I guess, two and a half years, but obviously you wrote this book in advance of when it came out, et cetera. What has evolved or changed, or what have you learned on the road as you've been talking about this book for a long time?
Well, the first thing is something I mentioned a little bit, that we are going through a huge title shift in dentistry right now. So all the stuff that you and I had to weather, braces, all the headgear, that will not be around in 10 years. I am convinced of it. It's happening. It's happening now. It's been happening for a long time. But now the tide has finally turned. And it's because parents are coming in. They're like, I don't want my kids' mouth smaller. I don't want to extract teeth. I don't want to ruin their profile. And dentists listen to that. So I think that's one thing, that this concept has gone from being way on the outside to it's starting to become mainstream. Like half the talks I do a lot of talks, are at dental conferences, ADA dental conferences. It's bizarre. Beyond that, I think the other thing is awareness around sleep disorder breathing, especially for kids. And I get these letters almost every day. I was getting 10, 20 of them every single day, of people saying, my kid has been sick for a decade. My kid has been sick for 5 years. No one has ever even mentioned breathing. They go in, they convince the kid to become a nasal breather. Their sleep improves. Their conditions are reduced or sometimes disappear completely. I get these all the time. And these parents, they're happy for their kid, but they're also so completely pissed off that they had to read this in a book and not get this advice elsewhere. So that's another thing. I see a lot of awareness around sleep disorder breathing, not only for kids, but for adults as well. And I think that that's so, so positive. And I guess the last thing is, did not predict this. And I think this had very little to do with my book and much more to do with the general awareness around breathing is, there's all these studios now that are just breathing studios, right? And they have cold exposure as well. There's many in LA and San Diego where people come in and do this very intense breathing. They used to just call that yoga, but now it's called, you know, breath awareness. But it's all the same thing. I think it's great, you know, if people are getting something out of that. I've certainly get so much out of that. I think that generally it's this awareness that breathing is not only important to health, but it can also help with athletic performance. It can help reach heightened mental states. It can help put you to sleep. All of these other things.
Are you so tired of talking about people's breathing?
You know, sometimes I am. But every time I get going, I'd be honest with you. Every time I get going, I get a little more activated. I think I've gotten a little activated during this, during our interview here, because I'm passionate about the subject. I learned a lot researching the book, but it's mostly from hearing stories of people over and over and over again, the same stories that really puts a little skip in my step and makes me want to keep going. That's not to say, you know, in 2 years from now, I'm going to still be talking about this stuff. Hopefully the word will be out, and I'm working on a new book anyway, so I'm sort of going from one world to the other, but I still get pumped up about it. There's still so much to learn. I'm learning as I'm going along, and people are teaching me, and that's just a wonderful thing.
Well, James makes me laugh, and I am, as mentioned, incredibly grateful to him, both for the book and also for his guidance as I've navigated through this. And it's nothing that you can't already find in the book, ultimately. But working through my own breathing issues, my migraines, my palate, and helping Max as well, his book was an essential guide. And as we also mentioned, Raphael at Stanford, when I had first spoken to him and sort of explained what was happening, I feel like he said effectively that he thinks in time that most ADHD will be connected back to sleep, which is a pretty profound idea, particularly if the intervention is through helping everyone breathe better. And throughout breath, there's tons of amazing storytelling and really interesting historical examples of people who have done pretty incredible things simply by changing the way that they breathe. Highly, highly recommend. And it also has, there's lots of interventions in there as well, as well as experts that you can go to, like the Buteyko breathing method. All right, I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. You can find show notes and full transcripts of the episodes at theelisepodcast.com. Please sign up for my newsletter. I promise I won't spam you. Or follow me on Instagram at Elise Lunan to get updates on new episodes. I'd also like to give a huge thank you to my sponsors who make this show possible. Please support them the way they support this podcast. This has been a presentation of Cadence 13 Studio. If you enjoyed this episode, please listen, rate, review, and follow Pulling the Thread, available now for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts, i.e. wherever you're listening right now. I also want to thank you in advance for sharing any episodes with friends who you think might like the show, because that is how podcasts grow. I want to give a shout out to Phil Svitek, Lauren LaGrasso, Serena Reagan, Mary Kate McDonough, and the entire Cadence 13 team for producing these episodes, and to Valero Duval for my key art. Take care of yourselves. I'll see you next week. High schoolers are busy, but no one's too busy to help fight cancer. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society is looking for their next Student Visionaries of the Year. Could that be your child? High schoolers who participate in the 7-week philanthropic leadership development program gain valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship. Forming strong teams behind them, they fundraise for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor right in their local community. Most importantly, this campaign is an opportunity for high schoolers to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on the lives of blood cancer patients and their families. Sound like something your child might be interested in? You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students.